Love Bristol. Love BCFM 93.2.
There is no cause to tell the police. It's plain for all to see.
The Tongs.
There is only one Tong here, my son.
You know about them?
All who live here know of the Red Dragon Tong. Look around you at the squalor and the filth. See the children underfed and diseased. Ask yourself, why is this? Why don't the children eat? Why don't the people live in decent homes? Why do the sick die from lack of medicines? Ask all these questions and I shall give you but one answer. The Red Dragon.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. Charlie Rowley says he got Novichok all over both his hands. If so, how come he's still alive? Yes, unlike the Skripals, Charlie Rowley speaks. He's the man allegedly poisoned with Novichok nerve agent in Amesbury last month. He spoke to ITV News' Rupert Evelyn this week about his close shave with nasty toiletries. But was what he said believable? Also, legendary US journalist Seymour Hersh spoke to Afsan Ratsani this week about his career overturning US government war myths from Vietnam to Syria on Russia Today. But what lessons did he learn at the start of his career that made him so sceptical about what the government was saying? And killer fires in the Pennines in Greece, actually only killers in Greece, thank goodness, are just a reminder that global warming is spiralling out of control. Crazy people like Donald Trump are sabotaging us all. Or is it? The Labour leader's brother, Piers Corbyn, is one of the leading scientists who's challenging this narrative of man-made climate change. He's what's now dubbed a climate change denier. So we hear some of his arguments this evening that show, allegedly, climate change agenda is just bad science. And we ask Martin Summers, if that's so, what would be the point? Our sister show Dialects back on BCFM 93.2 at noon every Tuesday. Catch it online now at dialectradio.co.uk. This week, Master Race. Israeli-born musician Gilad Atzmon discusses the Labour anti-Semitism row with a Jewish activist from Brighton, Tony Greenstein, who's been kicked out of the Labour Party, plus two local activists. Everything you ever wanted to know about Zionist history, Jewishness and identity politics from two of Britain's best on the topic. That's Dialect on BCFM at noon next Tuesday, or download it from dialectradio.co.uk right now. As you may have already guessed, I'm also joined this evening by Kevin Cahill. Kevin, you're a former mainstream press journalist working for Rupert Murdoch, in fact, and The Rich List up in London. Just like to wonder what you make of this whole Skripal scandal, and particularly the latest interesting episodes going on in Amesbury with a perfume bottle full of nerve agent.
Well, the first thing is, the government has spent 10 or 20 million investigating the first incident. They have still produced no forensic evidence at all for the allegation it was Russian. So far, I mean, Simon Jenkins in The Guardian and Ed Thompson on Channel 4 have each said, some forensic evidence, please. There is none. But where, suppose somebody gets poisoned with Novichok in Salisbury, well, don't you first look as where's the nearest stockpile? 8 miles away in Portland Down. And it's not from a great source, but in the early days of the Thatcher regime, Portland Down assisted the apartheid regime in South Africa with its atomic bomb and its chemical and biological warfare, and almost certainly showed the apartheid regime how to make Novichok. Now, the story coming from Charlie Rowley is weird. He's kind of saying it was a perfume spray. You wouldn't put Novichok in a perfume spray. You'd have it in a very secure something or other.
Martin, isn't it also a binary substance that you have to mix two chemicals together in order to make it? Obviously, that's not easy inside a perfume bottle.
No, it's not. And, of course, if it was weapons-grade Novichok, everybody should be dead. And, of course, they've not actually given the Russians, who they're accusing, the material so that they can analyse it. As Craig Murray, the former ambassador to Uzbekistan, pointed out, all of the Soviet chemical warfare facilities were based there. They were completely dismantled in the 1990s. The US scientists came in and dismantled all of it. And, of course, under the agreements, we were supposed to dismantle Portland Down. But far from dismantling it, this whole episode has led to a big increase in their budget. Meanwhile, of course, the Russians have basically got rid of all their chemical weapons, as have the Syrians, under international supervision. So to accuse them of being creating Novichok to kill people in Britain when they've actually, under supervision, got rid of all their whole chemical weapons facilities, but most people haven't even realised the Russians haven't got any chemical weapons, they got rid of them all.
Okay, so rather like when we had the boss of Portland Down appeared on screen to talk about whether it was or wasn't the Russians, only one news outlet was given access to Charlie Rowley. So let's have a listen now to Rupert Evelyn, where he asks him about exactly what happened with this Novichok substance.
This is the first time Charlie Rowley has been seen in public since being poisoned with a lethal nerve agent, a chemical weapon stored in an unopened and unused bottle, which he found and unwittingly contaminated himself with.
It was a 3x3-inch box, half inch thick, which contained a glass bottle, so you had to remove the bottle from the cellophane wrapper, put the pump dispenser on the bottle, and it poured. I ended up tipping some of my hands, but I washed it off under the tap.
Cleaning his hands may have been the difference between life and death.
My hands were covered in stuff. Hence, I can tell you it was an oily substance with very little odour. Mm. They were on tests on it, and I was in complete shock when they told me it was Novichok.
Well, I mean, he's been told it's Novichok, but that doesn't mean it is Novichok, does it? I mean, the Russians have suggested it may be something like BZ gas.
It clearly is not Novichok, otherwise no. He'd be dead.
That's right. So in other words, and of course the timing of this second poisoning was just as the Putin-Trump summit was coming up, and the English team were doing really well in the World Cup. So, and then suddenly, bang, we're all reminded once again why the evil Russians killing our drug addicts now, not just killing our ex-secret agents. But of course, the original poisoning was also very badly timed. The Russians are about to have the World Cup, Putin's about to win the election, and of course, suddenly this happens. So many people around the world think it's part of Operation Beluga.
Kevin, there's a couple of other stories relating to this, Kevin, which haven't really received the attention that they demand by the gravity of what they're saying. First of all, it's the Swindon Advertiser back at the beginning of last month. It's talking about doctors warn of super strength synthetic heroin on the streets of Wiltshire. Doctors have been warned super strength synthetic heroin could be circulating in Wiltshire. This comes after the discovery last month of a batch of heroin laced with fentanyl. Now, this is this super strength heroin. Now, these apparently were addicts, these two, who may have just simply been
subject to this rather nasty material. Then there's also another story, which is also, I think, absolutely key, which is in the Daily Mail, and there are various others that have reported this too. The entire family of the alcoholic Amesbury victim work at the local military establishments. The mother of Novichok victim said her lost soul daughter is being deprived the care given to her because she's a nobody alcoholic who's turned to drink, battling postnatal depression. But also, you know, they're also discussing how most of their members of their family are working at these various military sites in Salisbury, which I suppose is nothing strange, but it does mean that potentially through somebody else, maybe, that they've had access to one of these secret military establishments like Porton Down. But anyway, what do you make of those two stories? One, the fentanyl that this rather nasty heroin substitute was circulating just a week or so before this incident in Amesbury, and then secondly, the military connection with the family.
Well, the idea of a maverick inside a secret establishment is not impossible at all. And the second thing is, the media uncritically accepted the government's account of the first poisoning, the Skripals. Well, they were supposed to have got it off a door handle. Now, this guy comes along with a sealed box. The evidence is totally contradictory. If the Skripals got it off a door handle and this guy got it out of a sealed box, I mean, what's the connection? I think
we need Sherlock Holmes on the case, don't we?
Yeah.
As Sherlock Holmes said, when you've eliminated everything that's impossible, what's left must be true, however improbable. Can I just mention Operation Beluga? Paul Burrell, who used to be a top anti-terrorist police officer in France, gave an interview about 2 years ago now, where he said, "Well, we know what's going on. We know what it's called. It's called Operation Beluga. It's being run out of NATO, and it's to disrupt and prevent any kind of rapprochement between Russia and the West, because the military-industrial complex in the West don't want that to happen." And he says they were behind the assassination of Litvinenko. They're probably behind this, and they'll be behind other things like the coup in Ukraine and so on. And in fact, you know, that fits the facts as far as I'm concerned. If I was Wiltshire Police, the number one suspects would be the British intelligence services, followed by the Ukrainian intelligence services, the American intelligence services, and possibly even the Israeli intelligence services. And the Russians would be one of the things you would consider, but frankly, you'd rule them out.
So what's
because
the point?
If the Russians wanted to kill these people, they'd all be dead.
If it is fake news, what's the point?
Well, the point about this is don't forget that Skripal was involved with creating the P dossier relating to Trump, Christopher Steele, and Pablo Miller was his MI6 handler. They put together the dossier to discredit Trump. So I think it's pretty clear that the MI6 are in the Hillary Clinton CIA camp when it comes to what goes on in America. And of course they run scams in Britain because they can. And that of course the real goal is to steer US policy away from any kind of rapprochement with Russia. And I think that's pretty. If I was privy to what the Russian intelligence services know about all of this, I think that's probably what their assessment would be about all of this.
Okay, let's hear what he had to say about his partner Dawn Sturgis. Charlie Rowley again, being interviewed by Rupert Evelyn on ITV.
His partner Dawn Sturgis had no reason to believe she was applying anything other than perfume, and when she fell ill, it was clearly extremely serious.
I do have a memory of her spraying on her wrist and I guess rubbing them together. I think within 15 minutes, I believe Dawn said she felt that she had a headache. She asked me if I had any headache tablets. I went into the bathroom and found her in the bath, fully clothed, laid in the bath, in a very ill state.
I mean, pretty harrowing stuff, Kevin.
Well, forensically, if this was supposed to be a perfume, Novichok has no smell. So didn't she notice there was no smell? All the forensics here are completely wrong.
Well, the other thing I'd point out is he didn't say where he found it.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did he find it?
I'm just coming to that, Martin. Let's have a listen to that little section of this, the final section of the interview now.
He doesn't remember precisely where he found the perfume, but is sure that it wasn't in the Salisbury Park where he'd been the day before falling ill. It's possible, he believes, that he may have picked it up a couple of days earlier. He's angry with the assassin who targeted a former Russian spy, but left a city exposed to a chemical threat.
I think it's very irresponsible for people to leave the poison, you know, for anybody to pick up. It could have been children or...
With his home a scene of crime and nerve agent contamination, Charlie Rowley cannot go back there. Although right now, he doesn't want to.
It's locked down until decontamination. The truth is, I wouldn't like to go back.
Too many memories.
Too many bad memories.
Well, I don't know what your instinct is as to whether he makes a good, credible, reliable witness, really, because I also heard there, rather naughty, was Rupert Evelyn actually prompting him, and then Charlie repeating what Rupert was saying. Also, he's using expressions like, I forgot, I believe, I think...
Well, I mean, he didn't actually say where he'd found it, which I think is extraordinary. He must know where he found it. And, of course, the thing is...
He says he's forgotten.
Somebody put it there. Now, was it the Russians who put it there? Or would it be the British intelligence services who just leave it lying around for somebody to find, spray on them, and then, of course, they can say, oh, yes, this is the stuff
is it feasible that someone like Charlie might have been just given a script?
He doesn't know what happened to him. Nor would the Skripals. Yeah, I mean, why have they got any information about what it is or where it's come from? They've been told what it is and where it's come from by the British intelligence services. Oh. But if I was Wiltshire Police, I would say that the British intelligence services are the number one suspects here. We know about Operation Beluga from Paul Burrell, former head of the French anti-terrorist squad. And if the people say, well, MI6 doesn't do stuff like that, I just laugh in their faces. Of course they do. They've been doing it for years.
Kevin, what's your thoughts on the possible motive? There seems to be absolutely full of holes, this story.
It's more holes.
But what do you think the motive might be?
Well, think about the public health issue. If this man found a box with dangerous stuff in it, why haven't we seen a picture of the box in case anyone else found one? Mm-hmm. The basic steps in public health, you know, caring for public health, haven't been taken. And it looks to me like a completely botched operation by somebody.
But the thing is, that might be the Russians, mightn't it? That's the problem. And we've heard from the Daily Telegraph recently, this is just a couple of months ago, just how dangerous the Russians are and various parts of British infrastructure that they could be plotting to attack and probably are.
Russia could kill thousands by crippling infrastructure in Britain, Defence Secretary Gavin Williamson has warned. He warned of attacks on the power grid and attacks on communications cables, as well as political meddling. Britain has 4 undersea interconnectors for electricity and 3 for gas, which provide energy to 3 million homes, a figure which will rise to 8 million when further connections are built. Mr. Williamson said Russia was spying on infrastructure and asking, how can we hurt Britain? Military leaders say Russia could also launch a devastating attack on undersea internet cables. Defence cuts have resulted in the absence of any UK submarine hunting maritime patrol aircraft since 2010, while numbers of ships and submarines which could also protect the cables have been cut. Approximately 97% of global communications are transmitted through the cables laid on the seabed, which transmit an estimated $7 trillion in daily financial transactions. And some of the busiest connections come ashore at remote locations in the UK. The damage an attack could cause has been described as nothing short of existential. Russia's US election interference isn't an isolated incident. Attempts may also have been made on Britain's EU referendum. Tactics including spreading fake news, trolling, and the hacking and leaking of sensitive political information could all pose a very real threat to Britain's democratic process, which some warn would have more profound and damaging consequences than a physical attack on infrastructure.
Here's a story that the Telegraph has never published. It's far bigger, far more important. The American spy agency, the National Security Agency, and its 9 agents, the big internet companies, have been convicted in court of criminal and civil offences of surveillance. They have surveillance on 67% of people in the UK. The Telegraph's never mentioned this story, and the Americans have been convicted in court. No Russian agency or body has ever been convicted in a court. This is hogwash. No wonder we're 34 and a list of 33.
Well, Martin, what we're hearing there, Britain has got no submarine hunters left anymore. So the Russian submarines could be zipping about all around our coasts, destroying all our infrastructure and our links to the European mainland and to Scandinavia.
Well, I mean, the Telegraph is owned by Murdoch, so you've got to take that into account.
No, it isn't.
No, it's owned by the Barclay Brothers. Barclay Brothers. And the other thing, of course, is that the Telegraph is the house journal of MI6. They basically tell the journalists what to write, and they write it. Did you hear the doomy music in the background there? Oh, and they could... That's 97% of... Of course, all these infrastructures can be attacked. And, of course, the Russians could, if they wanted to do, attack these infrastructures. But what would we do? We would attack their infrastructures. They rely on these infrastructures as much as we do. So the idea that the Russians, for some reason best known to themselves, would want to destroy the infrastructure of Britain, well, they could if they wanted to. They could nuke us as well if they wanted to, but they're not going to do either of those things. It's not in their interest to do either of them. It's scaremongering, and I think the real point is when he starts saying, oh, we need more submarines. That's what the point of that little article is. More money for our submarines. The Royal Navy's hand behind all of this. We need more money for submarines. More money for submarines, and I want to be on the board of the companies that make them, and that's my retirement plan. And did you see Williamson saying that he wants 20 billion more for the armed services, otherwise he's going to destroy May because he created her and he can destroy her. He's jumped, and of course he's the chap who said that the Russians should shut up and go away in that famous diplomatic coup that he made sitting in front of a British and an American flag. Did you see? He had a British and an American flag behind him,
because,
when he made that comment.
Because of Brexit, we need a big empire to cuddle up to. Oh, yeah. The Americans.
Yeah, well, that's... I think what's going on here is becoming increasingly... I mean, there's always been propaganda. There's always been an element of manipulation. But we're now reaching an absolutely hysterical stage of manipulation and propaganda.
And I think this is things like the Salisbury incident. They look so manipulated now. This is propaganda turning into reality... bad reality and badly handled.
And over in the United States, there's actually I was someone I hadn't come across before, Deputy Attorney General in the US, Rod Rosenstein. He had some interesting things to say from a US point of view about Russian interference.
The Russian effort to influence the 2016 presidential campaign is just one tree in a growing forest. Focusing merely on a single election misses the point. As Director Coates made clear, these actions are persistent, they are pervasive, they are meant to undermine democracy on a daily basis, regardless of whether it is election time or not. Russian intelligence officers did not stumble on the idea of hacking American computers and posting misleading messages because they had a free afternoon. It's what they do every day. Not just attacking America, but other countries as well.
That's just a series of statements saying that the Russians are doing terrible things, and I don't have to prove it, I'm just telling you. I mean, coming back to the actual nub of the election hacking narrative, if that's what we can call it, what happened was somebody gave WikiLeaks the Democratic emails from the Democratic committee that was running the primaries, and it showed that the primaries were being rigged in favour of Hillary Clinton and against Bernie Sanders. Now, nobody's disputed what's in those emails. What the FBI and the CIA are saying, that whoever leaked them in order to discredit American democracy, and therefore it must be the Russians, because the Russians want to discredit American democracy. Now, what the emails show is that American democracy is already discredited, because the Democratic National Committee were rigging the primaries against Sanders, and nobody disputes that that's what they show. Now, that's not the Russians rigging US elections, that's the US intelligence services rigging elections and then blaming people who pointed out on the Russians.
Well, come to fake news. The United States government spends, wait for this, $80 billion on hacking Russia, targeting Russia, interfering in Russian society, interfering in Russian elections, and no American media has ever written the other side of the story, what the US does to Russia.
That's quite right.
Otherwise, are they all just smoking hash with their $80 billion?
Basically, the US has the National Endowment for Democracy, which spends billions of pounds fixing other people's elections. They openly go and say, we're going to fix this election. Yeltsin was, in 1996, Yeltsin's election was largely fixed by the National Endowment for Democracy and the CIA. They poured funds in, they gave to Yeltsin all sorts of advice about how to fix it, and he just squeaked home. Just before the bombs went off in Moscow and Ryazan, which then led to the rise of Putin.
Okay, that guy we just heard from, Rod Rosenstein, he's apparently going to be impeached, or is he, in the United States? The documents were filed by Mark Meadows, the chair of the House Freedom Caucus, co-sponsored by 10 other members of the group. They argue that Rosenstein should be removed for withholding information from Congress, appointing Robert Mueller as special counsel, declining to name a second special counsel, approving applications for put certain members of the Trump campaign under surveillance. But the articles seem unlikely to have votes to be ratified in the House, where Speaker Paul Ryan has already rejected the effort, much less for Rosenstein to be convicted and removed by the Senate. So he's obviously quite a controversial figure, this Rosenstein, and quite clearly very much against Donald Trump, even though, of course, he's part of his administration.
Well, yes, and of course, there's clearly a faction within the CIA who are not happy with Trump, and they're using this whole Russians hacked the elections. I mean, it wasn't a hack. It was a leak. Craig Murray flew to Washington to pick up the leak. And Julian Assange has said, I can tell you where we got the information from. And he's actually said to Trump, I can tell you, if you stop prosecuting me and threatening me,
so
I'll tell you where...
So what's the impeachment and a possible impeachment of this guy that now looks like it's not going to happen, the Deputy Attorney General, and also to the mission of... Robert Mueller, special counsel, who is looking into Russiagate.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's basically nothing in this. But the real key to nub to it is what I explained earlier, which is what the Democratic National Committee's emails show, which is they rigged the primaries. Now, think about this. If Sanders had been the candidate against Trump, all the opinion polls show that he might have won. So, in other words, Bernie Sanders should be the President of the United States, and because of all these shenanigans, we've not. We've got Trump instead, but it was all being rigged by the CIA anyway. They don't just rig other foreign elections, they rigged their own elections, and they use taxpayer resources to do it. They should all be in prison.
Yeah. One of the things that hasn't been, but it's circulating in the American fringe media, is that one of the things Trump asked Putin for was Snowden. You heard it here first. Trump's people want 12 Russian intelligence officers, and Trump said, we want Snowden in exchange.
I mean, Martin, is that feasible? A spy swap?
No, it's not. Well, I think there's no what Putin actually. One of the things Putin said: well, you can question our intelligence officers because we've got an agreement under a 1996 agreement, but we want to question your people about people who stole money from us in the 1990s. Bill Browder, who then gave money to the Democratic Party, so he gave Trump information that the Russians have been collecting on people that they're not happy with. Now, of course, none of these people are going to ever come to court. There's no extradition agreement between the two countries. There is an agreement to carry out some kind of investigations. But of course the Russians are saying, well, you can talk to these intelligence officers, but we want to talk to some of yours. And of course the Americans then go, no, we're not having that. So then nothing happens.
Now,
and of course there's nothing here. Underlying all of this, the Russians did not try and hack the election. It's just an absurdity. But liberal commentators in the West, and you know, plenty of fools in the Guardian here, I think that it's all been proved, and we all know that the Russians are fired. Why would the Russians want to try and fix the American election?
You've said all this. Also, in the Britain here, UK intelligence and police are using child spies in covert operations, we heard last week. The Home Office wants more freedom to find information on terrorists and drug gangs using children under 16. The Committee of the House of Lords revealed the practice while raising the alarm over government plans to give law enforcement bodies more freedom to use children. Some of the child spies are aged under 16, the committee says, adding it's worried about proposals to extend from 1 month to four, the period of time between each occasion that child spies go through a re-registration process. We are concerned that enabling a young person to participate in covert activity associated with serious crime for an extended period of time increases the risks to their mental and physical welfare. I mean, this seems a no-brainer. Kevin, why are we allowing children allowing anybody to employ children as spies, looking at drug gangs. It just sounds to me like something far worse than the sort of things we were even hearing were going on in Eastern Europe under the Stasi and people like that.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of. And I think, in legal terms, it must be the most dubious practice ever heard of. Because if a child had to come to court, I mean, but this is Stasi type stuff. And some of our intelligence services are up to it because they were not reined in by Parliament.
But can children give informed consent, Martin, to an operation like that?
No, they're not allowed to give consent to having sex. They're not allowed to vote. They're not allowed to drive a car. And therefore, they certainly shouldn't be being used as spies by anybody.
But why is it being allowed to happen in Britain today, this then?
There's basically a police state gradually being put in place, step by step. And this kind of, you know, the fake news about Russia and so on is to create an atmosphere of fear, which then allows the secret state to aggrandise more power to itself.
But here's the funny thing. We started with the level of credibility of the UK media, 34 out of 33. Now we know why. The public actually are not fooled. And this is the biggest stupidity in our structure, in our government system. Ordinary folk are not fooled by this crap. And, you know,
It serves its purpose, though. I think that those are the thinking portion of the population increasingly says see through it, but it serves its purpose because people are only paying half attention to what goes on. They believe that the Russians are up to something. They wouldn't be on the TV every day being accused of things if they weren't up to something.
And that's
all they take on board from it.
Remember, most of the British population also think the Americans are up to something, and the courts have proved them right.
Indeed.
Nobody's reported it.
Indeed.
Sincero, pero te crece la palma. Yo soy un hombre sincero, pero te crece la palma. Antes de morir me quiero echarme zarzos del alma. Encendido. Mi verso es de un verde claro y de un jardín encendido. Mi verso es un cielo querido que busca el monte amparo.
The words mean I am a truthful man from the land of the palm trees. And before dying, I want to share these poems of my soul. My poems are soft green. My poems are also flaming crimson. My poems are like a wounded fawn seeking refuge in the forest. The last verse says, con los pobres de la tierra. With the poor people of this earth, I want to share my fate. The streams of the mountains please me more than the sea.
Me complace más que el mar.
Oh,
It's from 1966, The Sandpipers. And I actually think maybe it'd be quite a nice thing. I don't wonder if you could guess why we played that, because the idea is it's a lead-in to a story. So maybe in the future, if I play a song that you can have to try and guess at home what story we're going into. And this one this week is the Home Office suspending cooperation over the US death penalty threat for the alleged, anyway, ISIS pair. Now, the question really here, Martin, is if they are going to get the death penalty, or they may end up like somewhere like Guantanamo Bay. And the Guantanamera we just heard there, is that is the connection with Guantanamo Bay. Do you want to just explain that?
Well, Guantanamera is the Cuban national anthem, and it means I'm from Guantanamo, and of course Guantanamo is in fact illegally occupied by the Americans, and they've used it as the base of one of their secret prisons. It's probably the most visible of their secret prisons, but of course it's Cuban national territory, and it's surrounded by the Cuban army, and they've always wanted them out, but they're not prepared to go to war with them to get them out, but they shouldn't be there at all.
Well, I'll put a link up on our show page to the Cuba Solidarity Campaign, who they're one of the probably the most well-organized groups around the world that's still campaigning for the closure of Guantanamo Bay, although there are obviously other individual journalists, etc., that are doing that. But what about this this pair? Because this week has been, we've seen a sort of reversal from the Home Secretary Saeed Javid, which is the Home Office has bowed apparently to pressure we hear today over two British raised jihadis facing the possibility of execution in the US by temporarily suspending cooperation with the American authorities over the case, lawyers have said. Now, it's a little bit awkward, this really, because I mean, they're being called this, that and everything else, except there hasn't yet been a trial. It's only apparently a temporary concession, though. It marks the first breach in the US, UK government position. The Home Office could be forced to extend the suspension pending the outcome of a judicial review. Home Office spokesperson said, yesterday we received a request from the legal representative of the family of one of the suspects to pause the MLA, that's the Mutual Legal Assistance Response. We have agreed to a short-term pause. The government remains committed to bringing these people to justice, and we are confident we have acted in full accordance with the law and within the government's long-standing MLA policy. This is Gareth Pearce's law firm in London that's brought this. But, I mean, they're saying effectively that the British Home Office policy, the British government policy, is yes, the death penalty is okay.
Well, in actual fact, if you think about it, Tony, their crimes were committed in Syria, not in America, not in Britain. And in fact, they should be extradited to stand trial in Syria. That's what international law would demand. So the Americans putting them on trial in America for crimes carried out in Syria is actually against international law. And the lawyers should simply say, well, these guys didn't commit this crime in the United States jurisdiction. And of course, in the past, before the war in Syria was started by MI6, CIA, and of course, many in the Syrian army regard ISIS as a front organisation for Western intelligence services. And these guys probably got mixed up in that one way or another. That, you know, they'd probably be recruited by Western intelligence services.
I mean, it's just the interesting side to this, and maybe you can comment on this as well, Kevin, is that actually the death penalty is quite handy if these people are the victim of some sort of conspiracy, because
indeed,
then they won't be able to explain what happened. They'll
indeed
be dead.
Indeed. That's right.
You know, one of the problems is if these are the two guys who did the things they are accused of, then it was utterly dreadful. But this country has stood against the death penalty for decades, and this reversal is idiots. Well, look what the Home Office has been up. Windrush, child spies. I mean, God. And now they want the death penalty brought back, which is really probably what they're angling for.
Well, I think you made the case, Tony, that in fact you shouldn't execute such people because they've probably got useful information about how they got recruited and all the rest of it.
They were called the Beatles, weren't they?
Yes, indeed. And we know that the outside fighters that have been infiltrated into Syria, and we're talking about tens of thousands of outside fighters, some from Britain, a lot from Libya, various other places, and it was the Western intelligence services working with MIT, the Turkish intelligence services, MI6 and CIA, basically allowed all these people into Syria, armed them, trained them and directed them. Now, it may well be that these guys can actually shed some light on how they ended up there and who recruited them. Because if you remember, there was a girl from East London who went all the way to Syria to join ISIS. And when she got there, they were busted by the Turkish police. And it was a Canadian intelligence agent who'd been grooming her on the internet. And of course, in Syria itself, they're pretty clear that ISIS is a front organisation for our intelligence services. And that's pretty much well believed across the spectrum in Syria. But of course, in Britain, people live in a bubble where they have no idea that this is what's going on.
This all goes back to Brigadier Kitson. You know, black on black, if you want to cause the ultimate problem in Syria, you get Syrians to do it for you. It does chime.
But the whole idea of gangs and counter-gangs and so on. So I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever.
Isn't that the title of a book?
That's Gangs and Counter-Gangs is by Brigadier Frank Kitson, yes, but it was the British Army's counterinsurgency manual for many years. And, of course, what it means is you set up groups which are look like the terrorists you're fighting. So the Seller Scouts in Rhodesia used to go around carrying out massacres, pretending to be Zandler. And, of course, then Zandler got all the bad publicity associated with the massacres. And this is a standard tactic. That's exactly what Kitson was running in Kenya. The various Mau Mau atrocities were actually being carried out by people run by him, because what you do is you create a counter gang that looks like the enemy you're fighting. And of course, there is no doubt about it. The evidence is overwhelming that Britain, the US and others have been basically created jihadism in Syria. The weaponry that's being captured by the Syrian army as they make advances, it's all from Israel and the United States, and British military personnel are still in Syria. There was one killed some not long ago in North Syria, SAS guy. Now, the fact is, we are actually fomenting terrorism in Syria using jihadi groups with our Saudi allies, and then claiming that we've got to intervene in Syria to stop them taking over, when in actual fact they're being run by us. And most people in the West are blissfully unaware of this, and it's a manipulation of the public.
The strategy of tension that led to the bombing of Bologna was another strategy by the Italian intelligence services, backed by ours,
yeah,
and the Americans.
That's right. They've been doing this stuff for years and years, yep, and years. They've got a track record of doing nasty things. And yet we're supposed to trust them when they tell us that the Russians are going to kill us all and perhaps in our beds, and perhaps we could have some more money, please.
Not far from there is Israel. We've just seen this new Jewish nation state bill come in, which is effectively enshrining apartheid in law. You have a whole load of second class citizens. But it used to be 95% of the population in the mid 1940s when the migration into Israel started. That is the Arab majority in those days. Now, very much is subject to, well, I mean, arbitrary stuff like what's been going on in Jerusalem today after Friday prayers for a while. Israeli troops at Al-Aqsa Mosque again.
Well, that's right. They're pushing to try and provoke an intifada. Incidentally, of course, the White Helmets have all been extricated from southern Syria by the Israelis. And guess what? These pro-jihadi White Helmets who are funded by our taxes, we're going to have them here. And there's an Italian politician pointing out, hang on a minute, you won't take people that come across the sea from Libya on rafts and so on, but you're going to whisk these people out, and they're going to be resettled. Meanwhile, the rest of the people in Syria are being left to their fate. The White Helmets were always a puppet organisation, and now their personnel, including some jihadis who are embedded with the organisation, are now going to be given political asylum in Britain because we support jihadism.
It does seem
we don't oppose it.
If you remember that
it.
Business with Khadija Sultana, the girl
indeed
from Red Nor Green, the guy who was actually getting her across there had been told that if he cooperated with Canadian intelligence and British intelligence, he would be given a British passport or a Canadian passport.
Yes, this is the bribe they use.
You're living in a country which is in turmoil, but cooperate with us for a while and you can come and live in Britain. Now, that's a recipe
well,
for
it
disaster.
Is. And, of course, it was the Turkish civilian police who arrested him. And then the police officers concerned were then accused of treason and lost their jobs, and I don't know what happened to them. And the jihadis that have been infiltrated into Syria from Turkey and from Jordan, they've been facilitated by our taxes. The White Helmets were set up by James Le Mesurier, a former British intelligence officer based in Turkey. They get loads and loads of money from our taxes to fake chemical weapons attacks, which then lead to airstrikes, which is what all the evidence now shows there was no chemical chemical weapon attack in Douma. It was a theatre by the White Helmets, who are our puppets. And of course, we then fired at the Syrians and so on. And they could have fired back at the Akrotiri airbase and killed some RAF personnel.
So
maybe they should have done.
We've also heard this week, President Erdogan in Turkey, right next door, has been rebuked for claiming the Israelis officials have the Hitler spirit. Now, he's really talking about this nation-state bill, saying that actually what the Israeli state is doing is comparable to Nazism. Now, surely that's an exaggeration.
Well, I think the fact is that comparing the Israeli state to Nazis, it's a standard trope in terms of internal Israeli politics. And, of course, it wouldn't go down... The whole question of the anti-Semitism definition in the Labour Party, comparing Israel to Nazis has not been included because politicians in Israel frequently refer to their, you know, refer to the Nazi past and accuse each other of being potential Nazis.
It's merely political rhetoric.
What
Erdogan has said, Kevin, is that, let me just get the exact quote, is saying that the spirit of Hitler lives on in Israel after the country passed a controversial nation state law. And that the move makes the country, according to President Erdogan, the world's most Zionist, fascist, racist state, the president, Turkish leader has claimed.
Never a man to mince his words. The only problem is Erdogan's own actions in Turkey are despicable. He is a tyrant seeking to become a dictator. So, I mean, really is the kettle calling the pot black.
I mean, it surely is. I mean, can you compare the two, Martin? Turkey and, in terms of human rights, this is?
I would suggest that they're both human rights abusers. Erdogan has a significant political support, and don't forget the Americans tried to bump him out with a coup, which is, of course, he's therefore, you know, the Russians helped him to survive. I don't like the Israeli government. I don't particularly like the Turkish government. You've got to recognise that they represent certain political opinions, and of course they've got to recognise that Hamas and Hezbollah represent certain opinions.
Surely the attempt to really get a war started with Iran does make Israel a particularly dangerous state at the moment.
Well, indeed, yes, and the British are going to have to decide. I do not want a war with Iran, and I'm quite sure most of the people listening to this programme don't. Somebody better tell Theresa May, because we're going to have one.
Within probably weeks. But look at the other side of that. If there's a war with Iran, the price of oil will jump. And you can bet there's a bunch of speculators who aren't Russian, mostly, but who are American, just waiting for that to happen. You know, that
if you know what's going to happen, you can make a lot of money on these things.
You can make a lot of money out of it. Wars have predictable effects. And a war against Iran means the Straits of Hormuz will be closed.
Getting bigger by being better. The number one choice for Bristol. This is BCFM 93.2.
So, the hottest week of the year. Killer fires in Greece. Just a reminder, the global warming is spiralling out of control. But is it? Labour leader's brother, Piers Corbyn, is one of the leading scientists challenging the narrative of man-made climate change. So let's have a listen to him now, a presentation a few years ago.
First of all, things are not always what they seem. In science, you can conjure up things which look as if they're true when they're not. And global warming ideas, including the arrows of radiation, so-called, which justify their theory, are this type of illusion. Now, we know the CO2 theory doesn't work, and it's not because of all the meddling and ClimateGate. But the reason why their theory fails is because the theory fails. It's not because they lied, which they did, but it's because their predictions all fail. And actually, carbon dioxide levels are an effect, not a cause of changes in climate. That is an observed fact. So that's the first thing to say to anyone that argues with you. And the other things are that all the extremes now reported are the wrong type of extremes for the CO2 story. Now, by that I mean, if you've got a warmer world, the jet stream is going to be shorter further north. So the colder area is smaller and the warmer area is bigger. A colder world, it gets longer and got more wild swings in it. Now, right now we haven't got a shorter one. We've had a longer one for the last five or ten years, basically. So it's the wrong type of circulation for the global warming theory. Completely wrong. And these extremes that are happening are because the jet stream goes up and down a lot, and it can bring cold air down, so you get these sudden cold things, and warm air can come up and you get sudden warm things. So you can have warm Arctic and cold Britain, for example. And that is a consequence of the wild jet stream. It's nothing to do with the CO2 theory. So all the extremes happening now are actually a negation of the CO2 theory, and all their predictions have failed anyway. Right, so to summarise, there's three or four key points as to why it doesn't work. One is, if you look at the actual evidence, carbon dioxide levels follow changes in temperature by a lag of a few hundred years. Second thing is that if man is going to be in charge, the CO2 that nature produces has to be somehow dominated by man. Now, man only produces 4% of the CO2 that goes in and out of the sea all the time. So man's CO2, if it's going to dominate nature, requires a conspiracy of nature. So that animals or whatever have to, if you drive a car down the road, the animals have to think, oh my God, oh, there goes a man producing CO2, let's do the same. I mean, otherwise, nature would rule and it would just be random. For example, termites produce 10 times more CO2 than mankind. So let's have war on termites. I mean, I haven't heard that one. Better to do that than have a war on the people of Kosovo, frankly. You know, but they don't do that. So we know they don't believe their own theory anyway, and I've got some examples to prove that later on. The reason why is the basic laws of physics point out that carbon dioxide levels are going to be in equilibrium with the amounts in any liquid they're in equilibrium with. The sea. 70% of the globe covered in sea. There's 50 times more CO2 in the sea than in the air. Warm up the sea a bit, like warm up a bottle of pop, the CO2 comes off. Cool it down, and it will absorb more. And there's a lag of some hundreds of years because the circulation patterns of the sea are so slow and complicated that the medieval warm period, for example, of 800 years ago is now probably evidencing in the extra CO2 around. Now, we've had a lot of discussion about Arctic. They always say, oh, yeah, look, the Arctic's doing this, Arctic's doing that. And I said, look, hang on, no. As I said, if the Arctic warms, it's because the jet stream has gone wild. Now, in 1816, well, the Royal Society wrote to the Admiralty in 1817 to say the Arctic, and this was the, 1816 was the year of no summer, right? Lousy, just like 2012, very similar to that. Right, the Royal Society wrote to the Admiralty and said there's not much ice around in the Arctic. And they were, like, puzzled, you know. Well, that's the point. There was wild jet stream then, as there's wild jet stream now. So the warming of the Arctic, so-called temporary, is evidence of nothing at all. In fact, all these warmings are like dipoles. There'll be a warming here, there'll be colding down there. For example, that warming of the Arctic just before Christmas was associated with snow in the Sahara Desert. And the cold area was bigger than the warm area. So low Arctic ice doesn't indicate man-made climate change or anything. It's nothing to do with CO2. What's actually happening now in Greenland is the ice levels are reaching record amounts. Record amounts. Now, they normally say, oh, well, less ice in Greenland proves it. Well, there was more ice, so they say, oh, well, that's because the sea's warmer and there's more snow. Well, okay, say what the hell you want, but whatever happens, they just claim it's CO2. It's a lie. If you look at actual data, the actual temperatures fluctuate, and they've got about a 60-year cycle between one and the other. CO2's just going up. That's what's actually happening. So, the CO2 and temperatures correlate here, they anti-correlate there, they correlate in this bit, and so on. And now they're anti-correlating again, using real data. Another thing they claim, they give you this bit and say, oh look, there's a sudden rapid rise in the last 10 years of temperatures. Well, that's true. But 60 years ago, there was another one. And 60 years before that, there was another one. So there's a cyclicity in the rate of change as well, which is all about 60 years. And this actually comes from, in our theory of the solar lunar action technique, it's beats between the magnetic linkage of the sun and the crossing of the plane of the Earth by the moon. Moving on to the politics. What really do these policies affect? Well, one, the policies we've had have not reduced CO2 production, but they've relocated it. We've closed down Northern England and moved the steel production to India. Well, they're producing much, just as much CO2 there. But you paid for it to be moved. You paid your taxes to the European Union. They shoveled money to one of these Indian companies to, you know, save the planet. And people in northeast England lost their jobs. Okay. Or they're busy doing servicing and delivering pizzas to each other and stuff like that. Okay, well, it's important to have pizzas, isn't it, you know? But it's a nonsense. It does not reduce CO2. That's a fact. The economic effects are catastrophic, and it's not just northeast England, but the barges produced in Finland that were carrying the iron ore over to the northeast have been closed down and so on. Instead, we have a phony casino economy of asset stripping, globalisation and theft. And the whole shebang puts up energy and oil prices, because they want high oil prices to justify telling farmers to burn corn. You've got to have a high enough price to so they sell it to burn corn, burn maize. And I don't think it says in the Bible burn food, by the way. But the oil companies actually are completely hand in glove with the CO2 story. Other thing is the left has sort of got completely lost, because when I was around in the 60s or 80s or 70s or whatever, 84 for example, the left was, oh yeah, we support coal and we oppose nuclear. Well, now they oppose coal and support nuclear. This is all very strange. Basically, the left is, as it's, these labels aren't useful anymore, but you know, those types are actually being smothered by the globalists.
That was the brother of the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, and his name is Piers Corbyn, a climate change denier. Rather than talk about that, very briefly, a couple of China stories, Martin. China's waging a quiet kind of war against the US, say the CIA, but more importantly, they've stopped buying US crude and started buying Iran's. And also, there's a massive vaccine scandal going on. They're clamping down on the vaccine companies over there.
Well, this trade war is escalating as we speak, and it's quite likely that it will be used as an excuse to trip the top stock market over, and then we will see what happens after that.
OK, time to News at 8 now. Thanks to old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, also to Kevin Cahill. You'll find this show's podcast story links and comment page and our contact details at thisweekoneword.org.uk. I'm on Twitter at Tony Gosling. He's wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable weekend. Do please join us for the politics show at 6 o'clock next week. God bless. And don't let the banksters get you down.
Live from the Sky News Centre.